an Osho Talk. From Unconsciousness to Consciousness, number 11.
You teach your sannyasins to take care of themselves before they try to take care of others. This seems to go against many of the religions in the world that teach service to humanity, and it must appear a very selfish attitude to them. Can you speak on this?
It not only goes against many religions, it goes against all the religions in the world. They all teach service to others, unselfishness, but to me, selfishness is a natural phenomenon. Unselfishness is imposed. Selfishness is part of your nature. Unless you come to a point where your self dissolves into the universal, you cannot be unselfish truly. You can pretend, you will be only a hypocrite, and I don't want my people to be hypocrites. So it is a little complicated, but it can be understood. First, selfishness is part of your nature. You have to accept it. And if it is part of your nature, it must be serving something very essential. Otherwise, it would not have been there at all. It is because of selfishness that you have survived. That you have taken care of yourself. Otherwise, humanity would have disappeared long ago. Just think of a child who is unselfish, born unselfish. He will not be able to survive. He will die. Because even to breathe is selfish. To eat is selfish. When there are millions of people who are hungry and you are eating, when there are millions of people who are unhealthy, sick, dying, and you are healthy? If a child is born without selfishness as intrinsic part of his nature, he is not going to survive. If a snake comes close to him, what is the need to avoid the snake? Let him bite. It is your selfishness that protects you. Otherwise, you are coming in the way of the snake. If a lion jumps upon you and kills you, be killed. That is unselfishness. The lion is hungry. You are providing food. Who are you to interfere? You should not protect. You should not fight. You should simply offer yourself on a plate to the lion. That will be unselfishness. All these religions have been teaching things which are unnatural. This is only one of the things. I teach you nature. I teach you to be natural. Absolutely natural. Unashamedly natural. Yes, I teach you selfishness. Nobody has said it before me. They had not the guts to say. And they were all selfish. This is the amazing part of the whole story. Why a Jaina monk is torturing himself? There is a motivation. He wants to attain to moksha and to all the pleasures therein. He is not sacrificing anything. He is simply bargaining. He is a businessman. And his scriptures say you will get thousandfold. And this life is really very small. 70 years is not much. If you sacrifice 70 years pleasures for eternity of pleasures, it is a good bargain. I don't think it is unselfish. and why these religions have been teaching to serve humanity. What is the motive? What is the goal? What you are going to gain out of it? You may have never asked the question. This is not service. I have loved a very ancient Chinese story. A man falls into a well. It was a big gathering, a festival time, and there was so much noise, and people were enjoying, dancing, singing, and all kinds of things were going on. So nobody heard him fall. And at that time in China, wells were not protected by a wall surrounding them, at least 4 or 5 feet high. So nobody falls. They were without any protection, just open. You can fall in the darkness without being aware that there is a well. The man starts shouting, "Save me!" A Buddhist monk passes by. Of course, a Buddhist monk is not interested in the festival. Is not supposed to be interested. I don't know what he was doing there. Even to be there means some unconscious urge to see what is going on, how people are enjoying. And all these people will go to hell. And I am the only one here who is going to heaven. He passes by the well and he hears this man. He looks down. The man says, "Good that you have heard. Everybody is so busy and there is so much noise that I was afraid I am going to die." The Buddhist monk said, "You are still going to die. Because this is your past life's evil act. Now you are getting the punishment. Get it and be finished. It is good." In the new life, you will come out clean and there will be no need to fall again into a well. The man said, "I don't want any wisdom and any philosophy at this moment." But the monk had moved. A Taoist old man stops, he is thirsty, looks in. The man is still crying for help. The Taoist says, "This is not manly. One should accept everything as it comes. That's what the great Lao Tzu has said. So accept it. Enjoy. You are crying like a woman. Be a man. The man said, I am ready to be called to be a woman, but first please save me. I am not manly. And you can say anything that you want to say afterwards. First pull me out. But the Taoist said, we never interfere into anybody's business. We believe in the individual and his freedom. It is your freedom to fall in the well. It is your freedom to die in the well. All that I can do is just suggest to you, you can die crying, weeping. That is foolish. You can die like a wise man. Accept it, enjoy it, sing a song and go. Anyway, everybody is going to die. So what is the point of saving? I am going to die. Everybody is going to die. Perhaps tomorrow, perhaps day after tomorrow. So what is the point? Bothering to save you. And he moves. A Confucian comes. And the man sees some hope because Confucians are more worldly, more earthbound. He says, it is my good fortune that you have come, a Confucian scholar. I know you. I have heard about your name. Now do something for me. Because Confucius says, help others. Seeing the Buddhist and the Taoist, the man thought that it is better to talk philosophy if these people are to be convinced to save me. He said, Confucius says, help others. The Confucian monk said, you are right. And I will help. I am going from one city to another city. And I will try and protest and force the government to make a protective wall around every well in the country. Don't be afraid. The man said, but by the time those protective walls will be made and your revolution will succeed, I must be gone. The Confucian said, you don't matter. I don't matter. Individuals don't matter. Society matters. You have raised a very significant question by falling in the well. Now we are going to fight for it. You Be calm and quiet. We will see that every well has a protective wall around it, so nobody falls into it. Just by saving you, what is saved? The whole country has millions of wells, and millions of people can fall into them. So don't be too selfish about yourself. Raise above the selfish attitude. I am going to serve humanity. You have served by falling into the well. I am going to serve by forcing the government to make protective walls. And he walks on. But he makes a significant point that you are very selfish. Just you want to be saved and waste my time, which I can use for the whole humanity. Do you know anything like humanity exists anywhere? Anything like a society exists anywhere? These are just words. Only individuals exist. The fourth man is a Christian minister, a missionary, who is carrying a bag with him. He immediately opens the bag, takes out a rope, throws the rope into, before the man says anything, he throws the rope into the well. The man is surprised. He said, "Your religion seems to be the truest religion." He says, "Of course. We are prepared for every emergency, knowing that people can fall into well. I am carrying this rope to save them, because by saving them only, I can save myself." But remember, I have heard what the Confucian was saying. Don't make protective walls around the wells. Otherwise, how we will serve humanity? How we will pull out people from wells who fall? They have to fall first. Only then we can pull them out. We exist to serve, but the opportunity must be there. Without the opportunity, how can you serve? All these religions talking about service are certainly interested that the humanity remains poor, that people remain in need of service, that there are orphans, there are widows, old people, nobody takes care, beggars. These people are needed, absolutely needed. Otherwise, what will happen to these great servants of people? What will happen to all these religions and their teachings? And how people will enter into the kingdom of God? These people have to be used as a ladder. Do you call it unselfishness? Is this missionary unselfish? He is saving this man, not for this man's sake. He is saving this man for his own sake. Deep down it is still selfishness. But now, it is covered with a beautiful word, unselfishness, service. But why there is any need of service? Why there should be any need? Can't be destroy these opportunities for service. We can, but the religions will be very angry. Their whole ground will be lost. This is their whole business. If there is nobody poor, nobody hungry, nobody suffering, nobody sick, and science can make it possible, it is absolutely in our hands today. It would have been long before these religions had not stopped. Every person who was going to contribute to knowledge which can destroy all the opportunities for service. But these religions have been against all scientific progress. And they will talk of service. They need these people. Their need is not unselfish, it is utterly selfish. It is motivated. There is a goal to be achieved. Hence I say to my sannyasins, service is a four-letter dirty word. Never use it. Yes, you can share, but never humiliate anybody by serving him. It is humiliation. When you serve somebody and you feel great, and you have reduced the other into a warm, subhuman, and you are so superior that you have sacrificed your own interests and you are serving the poor. You are simply humiliating them. If you have something, something that gives you joy, peace, ecstasy, share it. And remembering, when you share, there is no motive. I am not saying that by sharing it you will reach to heaven. I am not giving you any goal. I am saying you just by sharing it, you will be tremendously fulfilled. In the very sharing is the fulfillment. There is no goal beyond it. It is not end-oriented. It is an end unto itself. And you will feel obliged to the person who was ready to share with you. You will not feel that he is obliged to you because you have not served. And only these people who believe in sharing instead of service can destroy all those opportunities, those ugly opportunities which surround the whole earth. And all the religions have been exploiting those opportunities. But they give good names. They have become very proficient in thousands of years giving good names to ugly things. And when you start calling a beautiful name to an ugly thing, there is a possibility you yourself may forget. That it was just a cover. Inside the reality is the same. I am reminded I was staying in Calcutta in a very rich woman's house. She was a widow. Is still young. She had a kid. Her husband has died just a few years back. And she was immensely interested in my way of thinking. We were taking the breakfast, and there I saw a picture hanging on the wall. I recognized the man. I asked the woman that, "Is this the picture of Swami Divyanand Saraswati?" She said, "Yes." I said, "It is strange. It is impossible to be interested in me and in this man. I know this man." He belongs to a very Hindu chauvinistic group, Arya Samaj, very fanatic. His religion believes that that is the only true religion, and all religions are untrue. And the Vedas are written by God. And their existence cannot be calculated in years, 10,000, 20,000, 100,000, no. They were created simultaneously when the existence was created. How can God create existence without giving him guidelines? Of course, that seems to be logical. And Vedas are enough. No other book is needed. 4 Vedas are there. So utterly childless, so foolish and so full of rubbish and crap. That the God must be insane if he creates this kind of books. So I had met this man, and just immediately we became enemies forever, because I said, it is all crap that you are thinking God created. And if this is what God created, then your God is in urgent need for a psychiatric treatment. The Vedas say the God created the woman. Of course, he is the father. He created the woman. He is the father. And he became infatuated. And he started running after the woman. The woman became afraid to be raped by her own father. So she tried to hide. That's how the whole creation came into existence. She became a cow. But you cannot deceive God. He became a bull. That's how all these animals came into existence. The woman went on changing. And the God also went on changing. That's how this whole existence has come into being. It is God still chasing the woman. In millions of forms. But the very idea of the Father who has created He's a rapist. And no ordinary rapist. Eternal rapist. He still continues to chase. And this you call a book created by God? So ask the woman that, if you are interested in me, then how is it possible you are interested in this maniac? She said, I am not interested in him at all. You are right. It was my husband who was interested in him. And because he had put the picture and he has died, just out of respect to my husband, I have not removed the picture. But I never look at that picture. But what my son did to him, I always enjoy. I said, what your son did to him? he said he used to hear, "Come and stay with us." And they had a beautiful meeting hall for at least 500 people. So he used to deliver lectures in their home. One day, the child must have been at that time not more than 5 or 6 years old. The woman was certainly sitting in front. The child was sitting in front. They were the host. The husband was sitting in the front. And in the middle of the discourse of Swami Divyananda, the child said loudly to the mother, "I want to piss." Now, this is to Swami Divyananda. And then the whole hall and everybody started laughing. In fact, everybody was wanting the same thing. The lecture was such that it created the urge, the desire to go to the bathroom. And because everybody laughed, Divyananda felt very angry. These so-called religious people are carrying such rage, such anger. He called the woman close to him and said, "This is not good. You should teach your son." But she said, "What can I teach him?" He said, "You can make a simple thing. You can tell him that whenever you want to go to urinate, you can simply say, 'Mom, I want to go to sing. I want to sing.' You change that word 'piss' into 'sing.' Nobody will understand. Only you will understand the code language." So the mother said, "Okay." After 6 or 7 months, he came back again to Calcutta. He stayed there, and the mother had to go out because some very close relative was just on the deathbed. And she wanted to see him and be with him. So she told to the Swami that, "I am going out. My husband is not at home. And he always comes late." And this child, I don't want to take with him. The person is going to die perhaps within an hour or two. And I don't want to go him through that agony of death there. And he will not sleep alone. He never have slept alone. So will you be kind enough to let him sleep with you on your bed?" The Swami said, "There is no problem. He can sleep on my bed with me. And when you come, you can take him to your bed." This was settled. In the middle of the night, the child shook the Swami and said, "Swamiji, I want to sing." The Swami said, "Is this a time for singing? In the middle of the night, you idiot. Just go to sleep. Don't disturb me." The poor boy, just out of fear, closed his eyes, but he wanted to sing. How long? He can manage. He again shook the Swami. He was again snoring. Woke up. What is the matter now? The boy said the same. It is impossible. I cannot prevent anymore. I have to sing. He said, but what people will think of the neighborhood in the middle of the night, and what kind of song, and I'm tired of the whole day traveling and talking to people, and now I have to listen to your song. Can't you wait? In the morning I can listen. The boy said, no, I cannot wait. The Swami said, just be a little patient. Everybody can wait, there is no problem. Singing is not such a thing that you can't wait. The boy had to listen to him because he was shouting loudly and he was alone there. And the father was not there, the mother was not there. And this man says it can be controlled and it can, you have to be patient. He said, okay, I will try. He closed his eyes, but within a few minutes, the Swami was snoring again. He woke him. He said, now whether you stop me or not, it is going to sing. Here in the bed. The Swami said, then you do one thing. You simply whisper in my ear. So nobody will hear it. Just, you devil, just whisper in my ear. The boy said, do you really mean it? He said, yes, I mean it. You whisper and then go to sleep and let me sleep. And never again in the night this singing business. In the morning. So the boy whispered in his ear. But then it was too late. Then he remembered that what singing means and why the boy was incapable to control it. It was his own doing. He has changed a reality into a phony, false world. And he himself forgot about it. All these religions have given good names, beautiful names to ugly realities. Why serve the poor when poverty can be destroyed? No religion says destroy poverty. They are in deep conspiracy with the vested interests. They don't say destroy poverty. They don't suggest any measures how the poverty can be destroyed, stopped. But serve the poor. Serve the widows. They don't say that, why force the woman to remain a widow? So simple a phenomenon. The man is allowed in India to get married as many times as he wants. In fact, the moment the wife dies, her body is being burnt on the funeral pyre, and people are beginning to talk about the marriage. Where to arrange this man's marriage? So ugly. So inhuman. The body of the body is not burnt yet completely. But sitting around there, what else to do? They have to talk about something, and this is the most hot topic. Now this man needs a woman. And they are suggesting that where it will be good, which woman will be suitable to him. And not a widow. Nobody is ready to get married to a widow. She is a used woman. Woman is a thing used by somebody else. How can you use it? Man is not used. He always remains fresh, pure. He can get married. In India, for thousands of years, the woman has suffered so much because of this idea that she has to remain widow. Millions of widows they cannot use any other color than white. They have to shave their head. They cannot use any ornament. In every possible way, it has been made clear to them that they have to live almost a dead life. They cannot move into the society as other women. Particularly in festivals, they are not supposed in marriages. They are not supposed to be present because their very presence, their very shadow, is a calamity. And the widow is told that she has eaten her husband. It is because of her fate that the husband died. If he had not married her, he would be alive. She is responsible for the death. The whole life she carries this burden. And now she has to remain in every way ugly. Serve the widows. In India there are institutions especially for widows. Because in homes they are not even equal to the servants. They do all kind of work. The whole day they work. But they don't get any respect. No salary, no respect. And continuous condemnation that because of them, somebody's son has died, somebody's brother has died. Everybody is against the woman. And she has to remain hidden like a shadow. She is not to be allowed when guests are there. She lives like a ghost. So institutions are opened by religions. This is service for the widows. But why have widows in the first place? It is such a simple logic. Make it a law that any man who wants to marry it second time has to marry a widow, not a virgin. Simple. And the whole problem disappears. Rather than making the problems disappear, you help them to continue. Now the same thing is happening in the West, in other ways, in other directions. Medical science has evolved so much. That the scientists say that there is no intrinsic necessity for human body to die at least for 300 years. And this is a very orthodox estimate, 300 years. They said for 300 years there is no intrinsic necessity for human body to die. For 300 years, everybody can live fully young. And if 300 years one can live, do you think what will be the implications of it? Just think Albert Einstein living 300 years. What blessings he would not have showered on humanity. Such a mature mind. Who was able to give the theory of relativity at the age of 26. Which transformed the whole science and its shape. Just think if he was able to live for 300 years. All that seems impossible would have been possible through him. And I'm just taking one example. If Bertrand Russell can give so much in 100 years, in 300 years, it is not possible for a man like Bertrand Russell to sit and not to do anything. Even when he was 100 years old, he was far young than your so-called young people. In his vision, in his approach, in his reasoning, in his clarity about everything. And if this man was able to live 300 years, I can say with absolute certainty that he would have changed many things that he had said when he was 50, 40, 30. He may have turned inwards. He may have become a meditator. He may have proved to be one of the greatest religious men on the earth. He had every capacity. And he had every courage that is needed to use that capacity. But the time was short. 100 years for a man like Bertrand Russell is very short. He has such a multidimensional interest about education. He wants to create a revolution. About philosophy, he brings new concepts into existence. About mathematics, which was not his subject, but he was so much interested in logic that he was compelled to go into mathematics, because both function on the same lines. Mathematics is logic applied. With one of the great mathematicians and philosophers of America, Whitehead, he joined hands and they wrote both a book, Principia Mathematica. It is so far ahead of time. It was written 50, 60 years before. Even today, there are only perhaps maybe a dozen or two dozen people who can understand it, what it is. If he had lived 300 years, he would have given you a totally new mathematics. Perhaps a higher mathematics about which Gurdjieff, Ouspensky, mystics like these people were interested. A higher mathematics which does not deal with ordinary material experiments, which deals with ultimate problems. And your mathematics that you learn in the universities cannot deal the ultimate problems. Ultimate problems are beyond it. A totally new mathematics is needed. Because when you come closer to the ultimate, you find all your categories, logic, mathematics falling apart. Existence behaves differently. So differently that sometimes 2 + 2 can be 3. Sometimes 2 + 2 can be 5. One thing is certain, at the ultimate, 2 plus 2 are never 4. I can give you a simple example. Why 2 plus 2 can never be 4 at the ultimate core of existence? Because no two things are exactly similar. Two chairs are not exactly similar. Two other chairs are not exactly similar. And you put all them and you call 4 chairs. And they are not similar. Each chair is different. You cannot use 4 to be absolutely right. The electrons, the protons, the neutrons, the world, deep at the ultimate core, behaves in a totally different way. If you go out of the room, we know that you can go only out of the room if you pass through a certain passage, maybe 10 feet, but you will be there in 10 places. Each time you take a step, then you reach outside. But at the ultimate level, the electron jumps without being in between. It is at the point A, then it is found at the point B, which is far away from A, but it is not found between the two at all. From A, it disappears and appears at B, and between the two, there is no passage. Now, how your ordinary mathematics, measurements, geometry can function? Something totally different is needed. And as man's life has grown longer, we have been able to discover science you may not have thought about it. Science has come into existence only in 300 years. Why? Why not before? We have not been able to find a single skeleton of a human being. Three thousand years old, nothing to say about further back, which is older than 40 years. The man must have died at the age 40. 40 must have been the age limit sometime, because we have not found a single skeleton which proves that the man died at 50, 60, 70. 40 is the last. So there is nothing strange when Vedas say, and Hindus think it is something of tremendous glory to them, that people never get old. Hindus think that in the times of Vedas, the science must have been so advanced that nobody was ever old. That is not the truth. The truth is, everybody was dying at 40. So how one can get old? When men started living longer and 70 became average age, and in Western countries, in some countries 80, in some countries 90, average age, then science developed. Otherwise, in 40 years' time, what a person can do? He is just trying somehow to survive himself, his wife, a line of children. And then comes death. Science or philosophy or religion or anything higher needs more time, more luxury, more comfort. Now, man can live 300 years. And if man can live 300 years, why not 600? Why not 1,000? Once man comes to live 300 years, it is absolutely certain we will find that there are ways to make him live longer. Then he becomes accumulated to wisdom. Then he can work out the complicated problems. Solve the problems. There is no need of teaching people service. What are the problems? The population explosion is the problem. All the religions are teaching serve the poor, but not a single religion is ready to say accept birth control so that the population is reduced. I am for absolute birth control. Only few people should be allowed to give birth to children. And that too should be done by artificial insemination. Because what is the need? It is possible you fall in love with a girl, the girl falls in love with you, but you may not be the right persons to become a parent, to give birth to a child. You may not have, because love takes no account about your inner chemistry. You don't go to the chemist to find out that I am falling with this girl in love. Do our inner chemistries meet? If you go at all, you go to the idiot astrologer. Palmist. The blind leading the blind. It is a biochemical question. Nothing to do with palmistry. Nothing to do with astrology. But man's ego feels as if stars are interested in you. Just think of the stupidity of the whole idea. that millions of stars are concerned with you. And are affecting you. And their combinations are affecting you. Just makes me feel sad about men. What kind of humanity has grown up on the earth? But all these religions are against birth control. And without birth control, there is no way now. I am in support for absolute birth control. Remember, not just birth control. Because birth control people, if not religions, then governments are compelled to accept that you should have only 2 children or 3 children. No, that won't do. Even 2-3 children won't do. Absolute birth control. Nobody is allowed to give birth to children. Anybody who is interested in children can go contribute his semen to the scientific lab. And the lab should decide that who is going to be the woman of your child's mother. It need not be your wife. There is no relationship in it. You love your wife, your wife loves you. But that does not mean to burden the earth with a crippled, blind child. You don't have that power. You don't have that permission from existence. Why you are taking such an irresponsible burden on yourself and for the whole humanity? You give birth to a child who is crippled or blind or mad or insane, and he will give birth to other children. That's how the idiots are always in majority in the world. Bound to be. Because the right combination can happen only through a scientific lab. You cannot, you don't know what you are carrying within your genes. You don't know what is your potential, what kind of child you are going to give birth. You love the woman, there is no harm. Love should be absolutely available to you. That is your birthright. You love the woman, but every woman need not be a mother. Every man need not be a father. Soon there will be no need for the mother either. The child can grow in the scientific lab itself. You want a child, and if you really love a child, you would like the best child possible. So, who contributes the semen and who contributes the mother's womb should not be your concern. your concern should be that you get the best child possible. So I suggest artificial insemination, test tube babies, and I also suggest euthanasia. Just as we are putting a barrier on birth control, let me give you another word, death control. After a certain age, for example, if you accept 70 as the average, or 80 or 90 as the average, a man should be free to ask the medical board that I want to be freed from my body. He has every right, if he does not want to live anymore, because he has lived enough. He has done everything that he wanted to do. And now he wants not to die by cancer or tuberculosis. He simply wants a relaxed death. Every hospital should have a special place for people with a special staff where people can come, get relaxed, and helped to die beautifully without any disease, supported by the medical profession. Unless the medical board feels that the person is valuable, for example, like Einstein or Bertrand Russell, unless the medical board feels that the person is of immense importance, then he can be asked to live a little longer. Only few people should be asked to little more to be here, because they can be of so much help to humanity, so much help to others. But even if those people don't want to live, that is their birthright. You can pray, ask, request, if they accept it, good, but if they say no, we are not interested anymore, then certainly they have every right. Why one person should be forced to live when he does not want to live, and you make it a crime? You make the man unnecessarily worried. He does not want to live, but he has to live because suicide is crime. He has to take poison, or he has to jump into the ocean, or from a hill. This is not a good situation. And it's strange. If he dies, good. If he is caught, then he will be sentenced to death. Great society. Great minds creating laws. He will be sentenced to death because he was trying to commit suicide. these problems can be solved. Hence, there is no need for public servants, missionaries, and their kind. We need more intelligence brought to the problem and how to dissolve it. So I teach selfishness. I want you to be first your own flowering. Yes, it will appear as selfishness. I have no objection for that appearance of selfishness. It is okay with me. But is the rose selfish when it blossoms? Is the lotus selfish when it blossoms? Is the sun selfish when it shines? So why you should be worried about selfishness? You are born. Birth is only an opportunity. Just the beginning, not the end. You have to flower. Don't waste it in any kind of stupid service. Your first and foremost responsibility is to blossom, to become fully conscious, aware, alert, and in that consciousness you will be able to see what you can share, how you can solve problems. ninety-nine percent problems of the world can be solved. Perhaps 1% problem may not be solved. Then you can share with those people whatsoever you can share. But first you have to have it. All these religions up to now have not helped humanity in solving a single problem. Just look what I am saying. Has this solved a single problem? And they have been doing this service business for millions of years. Poor are still poor and go on growing more poor. Sick are there. Old age is there. All kinds of diseases are there. All kinds of crimes are there, and they go on increasing. Every year there are more crimes in the world than the last year. A strange prisons go on increasing, courts go on increasing, and they think they are to stop the crime, and with them the crime goes on increasing. Something is basically wrong somewhere. What they are doing is unrelated to the problem. The person who is committing a crime is not a criminal. He is a sick person. He need not be thrown into a jail and tortured. He has to be put into a psychiatric hospital and served there medically, respectfully. It is not his fault. You must know that there was a time when mad people were thought to be criminals. And they were thrown into prison. And there they were beaten. It was only just few hundred years before that it occurred that these people are not criminals. They are suffering from a certain disease. By beating them, you cannot beat the disease out. You are simply being idiotic. They need treatment, and you are mistreating them. And the same is true about all criminals, because I don't see any criminal is a born criminal. The way he is brought up, the society in which he is brought up, makes him a criminal. And once his mind starts becoming a criminal, then you have to change his whole way of the mind. It is no use chaining him, throwing him into jail, starving him, beating him. It has nothing to do. It is simply enforcing on him that when he comes out, he will be a confirmed criminal, a graduated criminal. Your imprisonments, your prisons are universities for criminals, from where they graduate. So once a man goes to the jail, he comes out learning many things from old criminals with which he has been there. And all that he learns from your behavior is that to commit the crime is not the crime, but to be caught is the crime. So he learns ways not to be caught. You have to change his track of the mind, which moves into criminality. And that can be done. Biochemistry can be of much help, medicine can be of much help, psychiatry can be much help. Now we have every source to make that man a dignified human being. Service is not needed. Sharing of your consciousness, your knowledge, your being, your respect. But first you must have it. To me, the greatest problem with humanity is that they don't know anything of meditation. To me, that is the greatest problem. Neither the population, nor the atom bomb, nor the hunger. No, these are not basic problems. They can be easily solved by science. The only basic problem that science will not be able to solve is that people don't know how to meditate. To my people I say, first you be selfish, utterly selfish. blossom, come to flowering and fragrance, and then spread it, then share it with those unfortunate people who had the same potential as you, but life has not given them the chance to go inwards, to have a taste of their own godliness. I am against all the religions, because to me, what they have done is absolutely useless. But they do with beautiful words, and they hide things in beautiful words. For example, Jesus on the cross says to God, and Christians have been quoting that for centuries as one of the most profound sayings, and it appears so, but only appears so. Don't be deceived by the appearance. The appearance is not the reality. Jesus says on the cross to God as his last prayer, Abba, that is Aramaic for father, Abba, forgive these people because they do not know what they are doing. Such a beautiful statement, such a forgiveness, that they are crucifying him, and he is asking his God to forgive those who are crucifying him. But I have looked deeply into Jesus' life and into his sayings. He is not a man who will ask for forgiveness. He could not even forgive a fig tree which was out of season. He cursed it because he and his followers were hungry and the tree was without fruits. As if tree is inimical to them, he cursed the tree. And it was not the season for figs. And even if it was season and there were no figs, what the tree can do? And what responsibility tree has for them to be fed? And this is from a man who is thought to do miracles and change stones into bread and water into wine. What is the need for such a man if these miracles are true? He could have simply ordered the tree out of season, be full of figs, ripe figs. In fact, there was no need for the tree. Stones could have become figs. But all those miracles are bogus. This incident proves that all those statements are bogus. Why he should go to beg in the town in the first place if he can turn stones into bread? And if this man was capable in turning stones into bread, why poverty remained in Judea at all? I am only talking about Judea. In fact, I should say, why on the whole earth? Turn the whole Himalayas and Alps into big breads. If this man is capable of that, then why go on turning small pieces of bread? Then turn these mountains people can cut and take away and eat forever. And why turn a little water into wine? Why not turn the whole ocean into wine? When you know the secret, when you know the miracle, then turn all the oceans into wine and let the people drink. There should not have been any poverty if Jesus' miracles are true, but they are all false. And he says, those who are not going to follow me will fall into the seventh hell for eternity. And they will be tortured in every possible way. This man does not know forgiveness. And if he cannot forgive you just because you have not followed him, how can he forgive those who are crucifying him? A simple logic. Nothing much is needed. Who are you to throw somebody into seventh hell because he does not follow you? You cannot forgive him a simple thing that he did not follow you. And you are asking God to forgive all these people who are crucifying you. No. It is not forgiveness that is being asked, something else. Even on the cross he wants to show to the Jews, look, I am the Messiah. And you are all ignorant. He is asking God, forgive these ignorant people. They know not what they are doing. It is not forgiveness on which the emphasis should be laid, because this man is not. His whole life is against it. It is to prove all these people ignorant. At the last moment also he is insisting, I am the knower one, the knowing one. And you are ignorant. But I will ask God for you to be forgiven. He is still trying to be the Messiah. Because that is what old scriptures say, that the Messiah will be crucified and on the crucifixion he will pray to God that forgive these people. They know not what they are doing. He is stubborn, just adamant. Even crucifixion is not going to change anything. He is the Messiah. And his last statement is just again declaring everybody else ignorant. You can put beautiful words, beautiful phrases, and hide some ugly truth. I don't want to do that kind of job at all. I teach you to be natural, and I teach you to accept your naturality. I know one thing for certain, that when you have blossomed, you will be sharing. There is no way to avoid it. When the flower opens up, there is no way for it to prevent its fragrance and keep it imprisoned. The fragrance escapes. It reaches into all directions. So first be fulfilled, be content. First be, and then out of your being there will be a fragrance reaching to many. And it will not be a service, it will be a sheer joy of saving. And there is nothing more joyful than sharing your joy.
The word content and voice recording on this audio format are the copyright of Osho International Foundation. Copyright dates 1953 through 2003. All rights reserved. Reproduction in any media is prohibited.